Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. Just read where some guy from New York just got sent to prison, got a 5-year sentence for making voicemail threats to our congressman, Steve Scalise, and one other politician. And he made these threats about 1 year after Steve Scalise was shot and almost killed up there in Washington, D.C., that congressional softball practice right. Where he was at. And the guy's name is Carlos Bayon, and he's 64 years old, and he admitted in court to leaving the voicemail messages. He said on the voicemail that, quote, "You are taking ours, we are taking yours. I'm going to feed you lead, and that you will pay." Those are, and you just you. I know people get upset with politics, but you can't let politics drive you insane, and you can't let politics lead you to commit crimes.
No, and when you call up and leave a message for a sitting public official, and certainly a United States congressman, it's kind of a non-starter when you're talking about lead and you get this and you can. I mean, there's a way to get your point across and without doing that.
Well, after this voicemail happened, Steve Scalise obviously called the police and security and authorities, and they found the guy. And when they found him, the 64-year-old from New York, they found a loaded rifle, 150 rounds of rifle ammunition, and books on bomb making. And they found all of that stuff in his garage. And again, he lives in upstate New York, in between Buffalo and Niagara Falls. And at least they caught the guy. You know, it's interesting when you if you spend much time on social media, when you see people arguing about politics and you see people getting so upset. And we've talked about on this show how there are a bunch of people who have lost friends, lost Facebook friends, whatever you want to call them, because of their political disagreements. I think you're taking it too serious. Sure. Should we pay attention to our government and should we keep an eye on them? And absolutely. And is it important? Yeah. But when people start threatening others, when people start saying, "Well, I lost a friend because we disagree politically, because I like the president and they don't like the president and that's..." Well, then you probably really weren't real friends anyways. I mean, it's something that we should all pay attention to, but people who let politics drive them crazy and drive them to the point where they don't want to be friends with people anymore or they commit crimes, I think those folks take things a little bit too serious. And I'm glad they caught this guy. And Steve Scalise wasn't the only politician that this particular person threatened. There was one other politician as well, but I brought up Scalise because, you know, he's our guy. From Metairie, he's the highest-ranking Louisiana politician in a very long time, being the one of the leaders of the House of Representatives. And the other politician that this particular person threatened, besides our Steve Scalise, was Kathy McMorris Rogers of Washington. He ended up leaving her threatening messages as well.
I wonder what the connection is there. Maybe they're both on a committee or subcommittee he finds offensive or something.
Yeah.
You talk about the irony to leave a message like that, an incendiary, violent message or threat of violence to someone who, as you mentioned, Steve Scalise was on he was on death's door. He almost lost his life. And the road he's had to get back to where he is just, it's astounding. He's a hero.
Yeah, and again, obviously, you know, if you're listening to this show, you don't let politics drive you insane. You know, if there's something you don't like, you do what you can to change the situation legally. Vote that person out. Do what you can to make sure that person doesn't get elected again. But that's one of the great things about our country. We're the greatest country in the world. I know we're not perfect, but we're the greatest country in the world, and it's great to have different political beliefs, and that's one of the things that that makes us great. We can, like adults, disagree without threatening people's lives and such. All right, coming up on the show, the operation of motor vehicles here in Louisiana, and the big one in Lakeview. It won't
open. The department.
Well, OMV, they seem to call it everywhere I see it around here. The
office.
Of motor vehicles. They're not going to open again today. They're going to reopen on Monday. And that means that they're going to be closed an entire week because someone tried to attack them in the cyber world. And all of the our servers here, they're still being looked at. The latest on that, and if there are long lines every day anyways at the Office of Motor Vehicles here in Lakeview, what's it going to be like on Monday when it's and Tuesday next week and Wednesday when it's been closed for a week? You already have to wait hours when it's never been closed during the, and now it's been closed for an entire week. They should stay open 24 hours for about a week. They should maybe open up a drive-thru.
And who's covering that overtime? Drive-thru.
They should maybe open up a drive-thru where you could drive through and get your stuff taken care
of. Who's covering that overtime?
We'll talk more about that coming up here on Bayou 95.7.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlund Morning Show. So it was 1 week ago this morning, on Friday, on our show, when we talked about an incident that happened the night before in the NFL football game between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cleveland Browns. It was the
fierce rivals, one of the fiercest rivalries in the NFL.
It was the incident with Cleveland Browns defensive lineman Myles Garrett and Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback Mason Rudolph right at the end of the game. There was only a few seconds left, and Garrett tackled Mason Rudolph, the quarterback, and when they were on the ground, they started pushing each other, and that's when Myles Garrett grabbed the helmet, and he ripped the helmet off of Mason Rudolph, and then when they got to their feet, that's when Myles Garrett wound up with the helmet and hit Mason Rudolph in his head, on his head, with his own helmet. And we talked about it again 1 week ago. I said, wow, he's lucky he didn't seriously injure the quarterback. He's lucky he didn't kill him. Because that's basically like taking a six-pound rock or a six-pound brick and hitting it and hitting someone over the head with it.
Right, and that's a vulnerable spot, too, less so than hitting somebody in the temple, but right on the crown of the head.
And I think both of those guys, especially the quarterback, the victim, Mason Rudolph, I think he was lucky that he was hit partially with the bottom of the helmet where there's a little bit of foam there. And again, Mason Rudolph is a guy that a few weeks before that was the recipient of a vicious concussion where they had to carry him off the field and they didn't want to mess with his head, so they only took off his face mask. And so his helmet was still on with no face mask. He looked like a player from the olden days. And then his eyes, there was nothing there when they were.
Right.
And then a few weeks later, this happens to him.
And not only did he not react, I mean, he didn't stagger and do the he didn't see like birdies or anything. He immediately went to the signal to the nearest ref. Hey, did you see what he did?
Yeah, he was fighting back.
Yeah. Well, but while fighting back, but first he wanted to make sure that somebody had seen it. Some official had seen it.
And so when we talked about it last week at this time, you and I said Myles Garrett, not only should he be suspended, I thought he should have been charged with either assault with a deadly weapon, attempted murder. They didn't do that. But they did end up suspending him for the rest of this regular season. He's been suspended indefinitely. And on Wednesday, 2 days ago, he had his meeting, the NFL offices in New York City. And suddenly, out of the blue, Myles Garrett said Mason Rudolph called him a racial slur. Why would he wait 6 days to play the race card? Why would he wait 6 days to say, hey, this guy called me a racial slur? If Mason Rudolph called Myles Garrett a racial slur, don't you think some other players right around there on the field would have heard it? Don't you think Mason Rudolph's black teammates who got involved in the fight right after it happened, do you think they would have really got involved with the fight? Do you think they really would have helped their quarterback if their quarterback was throwing around racial slurs right there on the field? No. And so I think this is, again, what desperate people do. And it's a shame because Myles Garrett, you know, he was a number one overall pick for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, this guy was a top first-round draft pick, good football player. But not only does he not have impulse control, and he can't control himself, and look what he did by ripping a helmet off of a quarterback and then smacking him over the head with it. But then he's a liar too. If Mason Rudolph used a racial slur and called him a racial slur, why didn't he say anything I don't know, right after the game. Hey, Miles Garrett, why did you nearly kill the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers by taking his helmet off of him and then hitting him over his head, his bare head, with his own helmet?
Here, in fact, is what Miles said immediately after the game in the locker room.
Did Mason say something? Is that what started things?
I just got to go look at it. No, I'm not gonna comment on it. No.
Did Mason say?
That was Miles Garrett who said that.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, what did I say?
I think you said Mason. Miles Garrett.
Here is the only, allow me for a moment, I'm not going to use the term devil's advocate because I hate that, but allow me for a moment to step inside his mind. And when, I think it's a bit telling when his immediate comment is like, you just have to go look at it for yourself. I'm not going to comment. I mean, he probably at that point in the locker room, he's in street clothes, Miles Garrett, he's already probably contacted his attorney, who has said, clam up, don't say a word. I could see a scenario where that could happen.
But
possibly did happen.
There are no other Cleveland Browns. They all were asked yesterday when this news broke. They all were asked yesterday if they heard anything or if Miles Garrett said anything about being called a racial slur to them. Not one Cleveland Brown player said, no, this is the first time hearing of it. Every Cleveland Brown player is saying this is the first time I'm hearing of it. And Mason Rudolph, the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, vehemently denies saying that. He said, of course I didn't say that. I think this is a desperate play here. I think when things don't go people's way, they get desperate, and then they just make things up. Again, especially on a Thursday night game, at the NFL, they have microphones everywhere. Some of the players are mic'd. There are microphones everywhere. If this happened, somebody would have heard something, whether it's a player, whether it's someone at the Fox network, because Fox is the network that carried that game that night.
NFL Films, for their part, has said that neither of those two players were mic'd up. You would have to think that someone else would have heard it.
And did you
Someone could either give ear witness testimony to either corroborate or debunk whether or not it was said. But for Miles Garrett's part, he says, I know what I heard. I was assured that the hearing that they had, his reinstatement hearing or appeal, I guess you could call it, I was assured that the hearing was space that afforded the opportunity to speak openly and honestly about the incident that led to my suspension. This was not meant for public dissemination, nor was it a convenient attempt to justify my actions or restore my image in the eyes of those I disappointed. I know what I heard, whether my opponents comment was born out of frustration or ignorance, I cannot say. But his actions do not excuse my lack of restraint in the moment, and I truly regret the impact this has had on the league, the Browns, and our devoted fans. And you can see there's a lot of attorney speak in there.
Yeah, if anything was said, it would have been heard by more than just Mason Rudolph, by more than Miles Garrett. Mason Rudolph's black teammates, I don't think would have had his back the way they had his back if they heard him say something like that. And you don't wait 6 days to say something like that. Hey, why'd you do it? Because in my opinion, what Miles Garrett just accused Mason Rudolph of is every bit as bad as what Miles Garrett did to Mason Rudolph by taking his helmet off and then hitting him over the head with his helmet. When you accuse someone of saying a racist term, when you accuse someone of being a racist and they didn't do it, that's just as bad as taking a football helmet off of a human being's head and then beating him in the head with that said helmet, in my opinion. How would you like it if someone said, oh, yeah, did you hear what Brewster said?
Leave me out of
it. Well, I'm just saying. You would have thought once, I don't know, right after the game, hey, Miles Garrett, why did you do that? Well, he called me a bleep, you know. But no, 6 days went by, and I think, I mean, if you're listening, do you agree with me? I mean, accusing someone of saying something that they didn't say, something as ugly as a racial slur, as we sit here in the year 2019, do you think that that is just as bad as taking his helmet off and hitting him over the head with it? I do. I think it's every bit as bad.
I'm gonna take myself and turn over all the cards and take myself out of that because I can't put myself in the mind of what it would be like to be African American and be called the word that I think we all assume is the word we're talking about here. I can't do that because I don't walk in those shoes. Not my walk in life.
But if he was called that, he would have said so right after the game. He would have said so right after the game. You don't wait 6 days to then make something up to try to save your own hide.
But not if my hypothesis might be correct, that knowing that that's going to be part of legal action or negotiation with the league to try to undo the suspension or shorten the suspension or what have. And why are you dragging me into this? I take one day off.
Yeah, and who knows if anything bad happens to Brewster, like he dies, you'd be in the running for taking his job.
No, thanks.
No, I'm just saying. I think accusing someone of saying such an ugly racial thing, I think that is just as bad as taking someone's football helmet off and beating him in the head with it during a game. I think it's just as bad because now you're saying that this guy said something he never said. And it's out there in the lexicon. It's out there. Hey, Mason Rudolph called me a racial slur.
Irrespective.
He didn't call him a racial slur.
Irrespective of whether or not a word was used, you have to believe. Even if Fox didn't have it, even if there weren't mics nearby, you have to believe that somebody was recording. What would you do if you were at that game? I'd be like breaking my fingers trying to get my phone to record that, yeah. Especially if I'm near the field.
Well, I'm going out on a limb here. It didn't happen. Mason Rudolph did not call Myles Garrett a racial slur. You can text the show if you have an opinion on this, 504-260-9595. Keep your text short, and please do not text while driving here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. So we were talking about how yesterday, 6 days after the incident, Cleveland Browns defensive lineman Myles Garrett said that the quarterback, the white quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mason Rudolph, called him a racial slur. And that led to him ripping his helmet off and then hitting him over the head with his helmet.
Right.
And I said, I'm going out on a limb here and say I'm calling BS because why wouldn't you say that after the game? Why did 6 days go by? Why did you apologize for your actions without saying anything?
I said there may be legal ramifications that he's got on his mind that kept his mouth shut, and he may have already been under advisement of an attorney. I may be overstating his case, but...
Yeah, and again, with all the microphones on the field, with all the other black players right around there, not one person heard anything. Not one Cleveland Brown said that Myles Garrett said anything to them about that. And
now your texts, and as always, they'll be separated by this sounder. Somebody's taking you to task already. They say 100% wrong. No verbal abuse is ever equal to physical abuse because you wanted to tie the racial epithet that was alleged to be used by Rudolph at Garrett. And you said that kind of equals getting
clocked
over the head.
I think it's every bit as bad. Accusing someone of saying such an ugly thing. Now Mason Rudolph's name for the rest of his life is next to... Did he or didn't he call the black man a racial slur? I think that is every bit as bad as what Myles Garrett did, hitting him over the head with his own helmet.
I agree with John. He didn't say anything, just trying to justify his poor choices. Sucks that people can just put that on someone, can ruin his career. The Browns were bounty gating the Steelers that night. They took out Juju Smith-Schuster, speared another receiver who had blood coming out of his ear playing dirty football. Well, that's what the Steel Curtain's known for.
And that you could be right there. You could be 100% right, but does that mean you accuse someone of saying a racial slur?
And finally, you are so misinformed. You tell a national audience Mason is the victim, and he basically didn't do anything. Mason tried to rip Garrett's helmet off first, then kicked Miles in the groin. That's what started the fight, and to say Rudolph didn't say anything shows how narrow-minded you are, John Osterling.
Well, no, well, look, does Mason Rudolph have some blame in the fight? Yeah, and he even admitted that. He did grab the face mask of Miles Garrett after Miles Garrett threw him to the ground, and he wouldn't get off him, and he wasn't happy about that. And he has taken responsibility for that. But to accuse someone of saying a racial slur, which is one of the worst things you can do, and say, and if not one other person heard it, not one microphone on that nationally televised game picked it up, that is wrong. That is wrong. All right. Coming up here on Bayou 95.7, the motor vehicles here in Louisiana, they're not going to open again today. They won't open again until Monday after the cyber attack. What a nightmare that's going to be when that finally does open up over there in Lakeview. Right. We'll have more details on that coming up.
If you'd planned to take the day off to go to the Office of Motor Vehicles, now you don't have to.
Here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. Now, this is a great story. This is a story of hope. Chinese doctor uses makeshift catheter to save sick passenger's life during international flight. This story is something when I read it. A Chinese doctor made the split-second decision this week to suck the urine out of a passenger. That's right. To suck the urine out of a passenger with a life-threatening bladder condition during a China Southern Airlines flight from China to New York. 6 hours before landing, Dr. Zhang Hong.
I'm sorry, who?
Dr. Zhang, Z-H-A-N-G, Hong.
Or Zhang.
H-O-N-G.
Yeah.
Dr. Zhang Hong, head of vascular surgery at a hospital in China, made a makeshift catheter using a syringe, a straw, and tubing from an oxygen mask. He's like the Chinese MacGyver. With the help from another doctor there who happened to be on board, he removed around 27 ounces of urine from the passenger's bladder. You know what that must have been like? Have you ever siphoned gasoline?
You're not going to tell me, are you?
No, but have you ever siphoned,
sure,
siphoned gasoline? Remember when,
sure,
you had to do that?
Growing up in the country, we would my dad would take the siphon hose and you put it down in the tank. And at that time, for you kids listening, the gas cap was behind the license plate. And you had to was on a little, what you call it, like a little spring-loaded thing. And he would, I mean, you could buy the things where you'd pump it with your hand and then draw the gasoline out. He would, like,
yeah, that's what you
suck
do.
It out and then spit it out. And I mean, gasoline is poison, and it killed him, sadly. He died about a year or so ago.
Yeah.
But, you do that for lawnmowers and the rototiller and those,
sure,
things.
Sure, and I remember.
I'm very familiar.
I remember being younger when you didn't have much money or much gas, and you were pretty much out of gas, but your friend had like 3/4 of a tank.
Been there too.
Hey, pal, come over real quick. And then we'd get the hose.
Right.
We'd get the garden hose. We'd stick it in the gas tank. And then you'd, on the other end, you'd just inhale.
Never used a garden hose.
Yeah. And then, yeah, sure, you'd get some gas in your mouth, but you'd spit it out. But boy, you'd get that gas going.
That's right.
And then you'd get some gas in your tank. Well, that's the only thing I could think of when I read that this doctor, this Chinese doctor on this flight, made a makeshift catheter. And then he removed 27 ounces of urine from the passenger's bladder, which was at risk of rupturing due to suspected urinary retention. You know, not all heroes wear capes. You know, some ride coach, actually, on international air flights. And how lucky was this guy with the bladder that was about to burst? How lucky was he that he was sitting next to not only a Chinese doctor,
right,
but the head of vascular surgery at his hospital in China. Boy, Dr. Zhang Hong, He's a hero. You know, and after he did that, you would hope that the airline would have given him a complimentary beverage, or at least complimentary whatever, to rinse his mouth out. Because if you just had a use a makeshift catheter to remove 27 ounces of urine from a passenger's bad bladder, I think you deserve an extra bag of pretzels or something on that international flight from China to New York City.
But, I mean, again, what are the odds? I mean, I wonder if anyone said, is there a doctor on the plane? I mean, how rucky can you get?
Well, is there a doctor on the plane that can help this guy's infected bladder? Oh, yeah. It's me.
I wonder.
It's me. Let me make a makeshift catheter so I could start to suck the 27 ounces of urine out of this guy's bad bladder.
See, here's my scenario. Somebody said, is there a doctor on the plane? And hands naturally go up. Who would be willing to suck the urine out and then the hands kind of slowly go down?
Yeah, like is your shoulder bummed out? Maybe I could help, you know,
right
with your shoulder. What are you saying about your bladder?
I've got some Band-Aids on me.
27 ounces of urine?
I'm not sure what part of that story contains the hope, but okay.
But other than that, they said it was a great flight from Communist China over here to New York City.
Right.
Boy, that passenger's, how lucky can he be? All right. Coming up on the show, I got to give you the details, and we will soon at some point, on the whole situation with the Office of the OMV, Motor Vehicles, here. Because they were cyber attacked. And it wasn't just them. It was the state of Louisiana and many of their servers were cyber attacked. And they've been closed all week. It's already a nightmare when you have to go to motor vehicles here in Lakeview. What's it going to be like on Monday when it opens for the first time in a week? Oh, the horror. Stay tuned for that coming up on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans only classic rock. Led Zeppelin there. Coming up next. We look at today in history. We call the segment Why Today Doesn't Suck. Suck is next on Bayou 95.7.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show, and it's time for us to look at today in history. And on this show, we call the segment
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
November 22nd. It was today in 1986.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
Mike Tyson becomes the youngest heavyweight champion in history. He was only 20 years old today in 1986, and he knocked out 33-year-old Trevor Burbick in just 5 minutes and 35 seconds to become the youngest heavyweight champion in history. And I was young then, and Mike Tyson, when he first came up, those first few years, he was the scariest fighter that I ever saw. And boy, big day in boxing history today. November 22nd. Oh, boy. Today in 1963.
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
Today's the day that New Orleans native Lee Harvey Oswald shot and killed President John F. Kennedy.
If you believe that.
Well, and they, you know, people say we're divided politically in this country today and these days. But in 1963, And what's interesting, Lee Harvey Oswald, the last place he lived in New Orleans was he lived in a house on Magazine Street. And he moved out of that house only, I believe, in August of 1963. And that's when he moved to Texas. And what's interesting about that is two things. After they arrested Lee Harvey Oswald and found out who he was, some media, local media, went over to the house he was living at and knocked on the door on Magazine Street. The landlord opened the door and they said, hey, did this guy, was he living here? He said, yeah, and I think he still owes me $15. I think he scooted on his rent.
Right.
But he and not only did he live there, but right across the street and up a few houses from where he lived is a bar that is still open. Hmm. It's got new owners now. It's called Le Bon Ton.
Right.
And if you go to the last seat down on the left side of that bar, on the bar there's an engraving, and it says Lee Harvey Oswald drank here.
Hmm.
And that's still there to this day.
Yes.
November 22nd. It was today in 2010.
Why today doesn't suck.
Motley Crue singer Vince Neil says he's taking a beating on the television show Skating with the Stars. This is a spinoff of Dancing with the Stars. I guess it didn't last that long. But I guess Vince Neil, and if you've seen any pictures of him recently.
Right.
I don't think he's in any type of shape to be ice skating, but he said physically.
Or touring, for that matter.
Physically, he was taking a beating. But we now know Motley Crue, they come out of retirement.
Now, is that a you're I'm not the biggest Crue fan. You're more of a Crue fan, or at least you were. Is that something you plan on seeing, or do you want to leave the Crue as they were in your memory from back in the day?
If it's a stadium tour with Def Leppard and Poison,
right?
If it comes here to New Orleans and plays the Superdome, I'd go. But we don't know, if we don't have any dates, if it's coming here yet.
Right.
That's not something I don't think I would drive to Houston or someplace like that to see. But yeah, no, I'm a Motley Crue fan, and I like Def Leppard too, the old stuff. And I'm sure that tour is gonna do pretty well. By the way, we have a pretty entertaining video. It's very funny, actually, of Vince Neil right now that was just put up on our Facebook page at Bayou 9, our Bayou 95.7 Facebook page. If you're looking for a laugh this morning, so I guess Vince Neil's continuing to take a beating.
Hmm.
And
a lot of people are fired up about this show, though, and a lot of people are casting derision upon it as well.
Well, Kat and I got into a little disagreement yesterday. Because I figured Def Leppard would be the headliner, Motley Crue would go on in the middle, and then Poison would probably open up the show.
Right.
I'm just thinking that because of record sales, Def Leppard has sold more albums and more records than.
Well, maybe they'll flip. Maybe they'll do a co-headlining.
They could do that. Yeah, I really like two out of those three bands.
You know, there was sad news today. November 22nd, the year was 1997.
Why today doesn't suck.
NXS lead singer Michael Hutchence was found hanged himself in his hotel room. And though it was never proven, people still speculate as to whether or not that was a case of autoerotic asphyxiation, which killed David Carradine. They actually proved that.
Yeah, that was sad because I like old NXS too. Mm-hmm. I like that band a lot too. And that's a segment that we call
Why Today Doesn't Suck.
I hate to end on that sad note, but
coming up on the show, this is kind of sad too. Someone just died after being shot while arguing with someone watching the Alabama-LSU football game a couple of weeks ago. That's the second shooting that we know about. We reported on one that happened out west. This happened more locally. That's a sad story. Talk about taking things a little bit too serious. That's coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7. New Orleans only classic rock. Brewster always makes fun of me and gets a kick out of how I love the old Wild West. And I love old Wild West movies. As a matter of fact, last night on Turner Classic Movies, they had on The Searchers. one of the John Wayne old movies.
Right. No, it's more in terms of Why Today Doesn't Suck, where we'll do things that happened in fairly recent history, the last 10 to maybe 50 years, and then you'll pull out today in 1841, Wyatt Earp, and that's...
Yeah. Well, I've got a story right here.
All right.
Because I think this is fascinating.
It's Tales of the Old West with John Osterling.
Most people have heard of Billy the Kid. Billy the Kid was a gunman from back in the day. Young Guns, the great movie. There was Young Guns and Young Guns 2. That was about Billy the Kid and his and his gang. And supposedly there's only one photograph ever of Billy the Kid. It's that one where he's just standing there and he's got a goofy look on his face. Well, stop the presses.
It's William H. Bonney,
he was
known as.
He was he was also known as right. AKA.
And that was not his real name either. he was born Henry McCarty.
But this is the breaking news.
All right.
A second photo of Billy the Kid not only is out there, I'm looking at it right now. It is now going up for auction. And they think it's going to get $1 million. I'm looking at the photo right now. He's playing poker.
That is breaking news.
He's playing poker with three of his gang members. He's second on the left, and he's looking down at his cards.
Mm-hmm.
He's sitting at a table with Richard Brewer, Fred Waite, and Henry Brown, all of whom were wanted men at the time of this picture. They believe this photograph was taken around 1877. It is only the second confirmed image of the notorious American outlaw, Billy the Kid. And it's an incredible photo. For a photo from 1877, it is much sharper. It is much clearer than that one other photo of Billy the Kid where he's just standing there with the goofy look on his face.
Right. I think they got the color off. I think they need to work on the color separation.
Well, obviously it's...
the way off.
It's black and white.
Yes.
He's 21 years old at the time of this picture, right around there. He's wearing a white shirt, a dark waistcoat, and a top hat. All of these guys have hats on. Mm-hmm. That's another thing I liked about the old... Everybody wore their hats back then. Everybody wore hats. I like wearing hats.
Now, what year was this?
They think it's around 1877. And there's a bottle of moonshine. There's a bottle of booze. And there's a cork in it on the table. And each guy's have cards in their hand. As a matter of fact, you could see the hand of Richard Brewer, the guy sitting to the right of Billy the Kid. And he looks like he's got a pretty decent hand on him. I wonder if Billy the Kid was an honest poker player. I wonder if he was an honest card player.
Looks like he's got a four of hearts. He's got a picture card. I can't tell. It's a little hard to make out.
But look at how clear that picture is, Rooster.
Why is actor Robert Shaw in this to the left of Billy the Kid? Looks like thin Robert Shaw from Jaws and The Sting. And
now, as someone who really loves the old Wild West here in America, you know, it was a simpler time. If these guys got in a disagreement about the card game, they would just walk outside and shoot each other.
Yes.
Or shoot at each other, and then whoever lived. And right. Then whoever lived would come back in and continue playing cards.
Do you have a bid in on this photo?
No, they're thinking it's going to... I don't have that kind of money. They're thinking it's going to fetch about $1 million. But as someone who loves the Wild West, and I love the movies and the history about it all, the Wild West in America, this is pretty shocking because we're always told there's only one known photo of Billy the Kid. Now, here's not only a second photo, it's a better photo of him. It's clearer. I think the photographer was better. I wonder how long it took to develop the film back in 1877.
Well, apparently it just came back from Photomat. I'm doing my... You know, the skeptic that I am, I'm doing my best to figure out how this is fake. Because, you know, that's what I like to do. I like to debunk. And I'm not saying it is. I'm not ready to... But it's I'm thinking it over. Why?
The person who's selling it says he's a family member, a distant relative. His name is Billy Wilson. So you got Billy Wilson, who says he's related to Billy the Kid.
Right.
And he's got this this photograph.
And it's on what's called a tintype, where I actually have some tintypes from my father's side of the family that came probably from right before the turn to the 20th century, right around 1900. And they're fascinating things. It's like a little little piece of metal, and within there you have the picture, and sometimes it could be have glass over it, but generally not, I don't believe. It's fascinating stuff.
It's completely fascinating because we were always told that there's only one picture of Billy the Kid.
And it's not good, as you say. It's not a good picture.
This picture is much better.
Much better.
I'm going to get it on our website at bayou957.com.
Right.
If you want to look at this, just give me un momento, por favor, as soon as we step aside here.
Now, he's not to be confused. I will hear in my head someone say Billy the Kid, and I have to stop my mind's ear and make sure they're not referring to Wild Bill Hickok, because that's a completely different person. Billy the Kid, if this photograph was taken, what are we guessing here?
1877, they're saying about 4 years before
he was killed.
Before he was shot.
At the age of 21. So he's about 17 in this picture.
And so that means he would legally be able to be drinking that bottle of booze that's sitting there on the card table.
Right. And I think Wild Bill Hickok, wasn't he killed by someone of tender years, like 15 or 14 year old? It's really here nor there, but
yeah, this is
cool.
Yeah, again, as someone who loves history, and especially American history and the history of the Wild West, I am blown away by this photo because, again, it's much clearer, and he doesn't look like an idiot in this picture. And the only picture ever published before of Billy the Kid, he kind of looked goofy, but maybe that wasn't a great cameraman, and the camera equipment they had back in the 1870s wasn't as good as what we have on our cell phones today.
Right, and he wasn't ready. The cameraman said, geez, and Billy wasn't ready.
Yeah, give me a minute. I'm going to get that picture up on our website. But boy, that's something.
Hmm.
Hey, coming up on the show, we haven't done our segment, See Who Died, in a while. That's
because no one really noteworthy has died in about 3 months.
But someone noteworthy died. You might not know his name, but you know what he invented. We all know what he invented. That's coming up. Here on Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. And the biggest story in the country, as far as I can tell, over the last 24 hours, not even 24, because the story broke, it broke late yesterday morning, is the story of the Cleveland Browns defensive lineman Myles Garrett, who got suspended indefinitely for the rest of the regular season for what he did in an NFL game a week ago last night, when his Cleveland Browns beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. 8 days ago. It was right at the end of the game, and I'm sure you're familiar with what happened. He tackled, took down the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Mason Rudolph, and then when they were on the ground, they started some funny business. They were pushing each other, and Mason Rudolph did grab the face mask of Myles Garrett because he wanted the big defensive lineman to get off of him.
Right.
And then after that, Myles Garrett just ripped the helmet off Mason Rudolph. And then both players got to their feet. There were other players there that were in between them trying to break it up. And that's when Myles Garrett wound up, did a full wind up, and he hit Mason Rudolph over his now bare head with his own helmet.
Right.
I mean, literally, it could have killed him. And I said last Friday morning when we came in here, I said, not only should Myles Garrett be suspended, but he should be arrested and charged with assault with a deadly weapon. I was even looking at attempted murder.
It could have been attempted murder.
I mean, because that's basically like taking a six-pound brick or rock and winding up your arm and hitting someone in their bare head as hard as you possibly can.
And, of course, the Browns and the nearby Pittsburgh Steelers, that's one of the – the Steelers treat the Browns like a whipping boy. And I'm sure there was jawing and guys were getting their comeuppance and whatnot and all the different things that were said. I think it was unique, and we mentioned this when we first talked about it after the game, that it's not that often – that you hear play-by-play announcers say it's something they've never seen before.
Here's a flag as... Whoa! Mason Rudolph got
Rudolph
into
needs
it.
To get out of there.
Believe Miles Garrett? They're swinging a helmet?
Yeah, there'll be some ejections.
Well, he tackled Rudolph. Rudolph didn't like the way that he was tackled.
Oh, man. Rips the helmet off Rudolph's head and then eventually swings it and hits him in the head. And then Ogunjobi comes up and hits Rudolph from behind.
Beyond words,
Joe. Oh, gosh, that's one of the worst things I've ever seen on a professional sports field.
And that's Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, who are the number one NFL team for the Fox Network. And Joe Buck has seen a lot of things on sports fields, and for a guy to say that's the worst thing I've ever seen,
right,
is something. Well, the reason we're bringing it up again today because
new,
of what
new development,
the breaking news yesterday, the NFL upheld the suspension of Myles Garrett, which is again for the rest of the regular season. It could go into next year. Many people think he should be kicked out of the NFL for life and arrested, but it's what Myles Garrett said 2 days ago on Wednesday when he was in New York City at the NFL meetings. He said that Mason Rudolph called him a racial slur. And all of a sudden now that's a new angle of the story. And why would Myles Garrett say that he was called a racial slur 6 days after the incident happened? If he was really called a racial slur, wouldn't he say it right after the game when he was interviewed? If he was really called a racial slur, would the black teammates around him that you see in that video, would they be supporting him? Would they be having his back? If he really used a racial slur, there are microphones everywhere. Wouldn't someone have heard something? And one other thing. If Mason Rudolph really called Myles Garrett a racial slur, wouldn't he have told any of his other teammates about it? Yesterday, again, 6 days after this happened, every Cleveland Brown that was interviewed and asked about this said, no, Myles Garrett never said anything to me about that. No, I never heard anything. I never heard a racial slur. So it leads me to believe that Myles Garrett is just making this up. And I think when you accuse someone of saying something so ugly, so hateful, and so racist like that, and the person didn't say that, to me, that's just as bad as ripping his helmet off and then hitting him over his bare head with his own helmet. I mean, I think it's just as bad because now, for the rest of his life, Mason Rudolph, he will be connected to a racial slur that he is vehemently denying. He and the entire Steelers organization are saying it didn't happen. And now his name will be next to an ugly racial slur for the rest of his life. I mean, for the rest of his life. There are some people that don't think it's as bad. I mean, I think they're both bad, and I don't want to say, well, what's worse? You know, taking a guy's helmet off of him and then beating him over the head with it, or just lying and saying that that guy who I did that to called me a racial slur when it never happened. To me, a very ugly incident just got another very ugly incident added to it. And I don't understand how someone could not only do something so bad like Myles Garrett did, but then wait 6 days to then say something that, in my opinion, he's flat out lying because other people there, somebody else would have heard it. Somebody else would have heard it. He would have said something about it right after the game. And not long after the game, he apologized. And he gave a lengthy apology. And he never said anything about it. I think it's, and in my opinion, I think he's just making it up. And I think it's extremely, extremely ugly. And again, the lawyers for the Pittsburgh Steelers organization, they are flat out saying this guy is lying. It's a lie. This was never said. And for the rest of his life, Mason Rudolph will now be tied to an ugly racial slur that somebody said that he said, even though he says he didn't say it. And I think that's incredibly ugly. And I think we just took a very ugly incident in the NFL and we doubled down on it. And we just made it twice as ugly by accusing someone of saying something that they didn't do. And look, Mason Rudolph apologized for this as well. When he was on the ground and he was thrown to the ground and Myles Garrett didn't get off of him, Mason Rudolph did grab the face mask of Myles Garrett because he wanted to get him off of him. And he took responsibility, Mason Rudolph. He said he should have acted better. He said he should have handled it more professionally. He said, but here we are now, and I think there should be more punishment for Myles Garrett for throwing a guy's name into the mud like this. I really do. Coming up on the show, we're going to do a See Who Died about a guy you might not know his name, but you know what he invented. Stay tuned for that coming up here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7. New Orleans' only classic rock. You see who died? You may not know this guy's name, but you'll know what he invented. And by the way, a guy who kicked in the NFL for many years. Ex-Minnesota Vikings place kicker Fred Cox died yesterday at the age of 80. Besides being, he's one of the greatest 50 Minnesota Vikings of all time. And he kicked for the Minnesota Vikings for 15 years in the 60s and the 70s. And he was one of the last place kickers who kicked with his toe, who kicked straight on. Because all kickers now, they're all soccer-style kickers. They all kick with the side of their foot. But this guy was old school. He kicked with his toe. He was a straightaway kicker. But Fred Cox, besides being a kicker for the Minnesota Vikings for 15 years, he, along with someone else, invented the Nerf ball. The Nerf ball. How much fun did you have when you were a kid? How much fun do your kids have with a Nerf football, a Nerf basketball? Countless hours as a child, I had fun playing with Nerf balls.
Here, I have audio.
Yeah, you can.
That was a recent Nerf tournament.
They don't make a lot of noise. That's a good point. But here's a guy, as if being an NFL kicker for 15 years on the Vikings was it an accomplishment enough. He then went and invented the Nerf ball. The Nerf football. I just, even saying Nerf football just gets me giddy. It brings me back to great childhood memories. You know, this guy, Fred Cox.
I probably have one somewhere.
This guy,
Fred. I'll sell it to you.
This guy, Fred Cox, is like Glenn Bell. Glenn Bell, he fought in World War II. He helped liberate the world from Nazis. And then when he came back to America, you know what he did? As if that wasn't enough. He invented Taco Bell. So I look at Fred Cox, this kicker / Nerf football inventor. I look at him a lot like I look at Glenn Bell.
So we have half of your Mount Rushmore. We have Glenn Bell. Well, Glenn Bell. Glenn who? Fred Cox and what's his name? Glenn Bell.
Glenn Bell, yes. Yeah. So anyway, Fred Cox, a Minnesota Vikings kicker from the 60s and the 70s, they said he also, during practice, he played running back. So his team would get used to being it. I mean, this guy did it all. And he was one of the last kickers who kicked with his toe straight away. And he invented the Nerf football. Fred Cox. Dead. The age of 80. Here on Bayou 95.7.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bayou 95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlin Morning Show. Have you been paying much attention to the impeachment inquiry hearings on Capitol Hill this week? Yesterday was the last day of testimony, and I think daytime programming will get back to its normal game shows and soap operas and whatever else they show. But a lot of the networks were showing impeachment inquiry, because in our country's history, there's only been a couple of times where a president's been impeached. We all remember Bill Clinton and that. I know they were going to impeach Richard Nixon, but then he quit. And Andrew Johnson, right? Way back when. But pretty much that's it when you hear the word impeach when it comes to a president. And so that's why people were and look, I didn't think there was very much there. Look, the Democrats and the people that do not like this president, they're just going to, from day one, whether it's Russia, whether it's the phone call with the Ukraine, which this particular situation was all about, a phone conversation that Donald Trump had with the president of the Ukraine. The people that don't like Donald Trump say that he threatened or did a quid pro quo. Have you ever heard that term used more in your life than over the last week or so? I mean, it's been used so much. I mentioned this yesterday. I'll say it one more time, that there's a restaurant in New Orleans now, and I think they're selling the quid pro quo boy. You give them the money, and they give you the sandwich.
I thought it was a quid pro quo. I messed it up. I thought it was a quid. No, that doesn't work. Never mind.
It was the quid.
It was going to be a squid. Squid pro.
Well, that's if you're having sushi.
Well, yeah.
The squid pro.
Go ahead.
Or if you want to buy a hat, there's a new place that just opened the
Chapeau
lid. Chapeau. The lid. The lid pro quo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a bunch of.
All right, we're done with that.
The reason we're having all of this is because the people that don't like Donald Trump think that he was asking something of the president of Ukraine to investigate, to look into Joe Biden and his shady son, Hunter Biden. And if they didn't do that, he was going to withhold money from them. And anyways, that's why this has been going on. Well, yesterday, something happened during the impeachment inquiry where the president actually was commenting during the inquiry. He was watching it. And yesterday, the president claimed that he's never been able to overhear other people's nearby phone calls, because that's what someone said during the inquiry. They said, yeah, the president, I could overhear the president's voice on
through the ear speaker, not through the speaker, not through speakerphone on a cell phone, but just hearing the ambient sound as it would come out to the listener through their earpiece.
Yeah, while someone else was talking on the cell phone, someone was standing next to him saying, "I could hear the president."
I know a couple people who talk loud enough that probably could happen, but
he said, "I could hear the president." So once that person said that, that's when Trump said, "I have never been able to overhear other people's nearby phone calls." So as soon as the president said that, one of the guys on CNN, Chris Cuomo, who's an anchor on CNN, he then grabbed his cell phone live on the air, and he called his mother because he wanted to disprove what Donald Trump just said. He wanted to say, wait, I think the president is lying when he says that you can't hear and you can't overhear other people's nearby phone calls.
Right. Well, it sounded like this.
That he has really good hearing, some would say, the best hearing ever. And he's never been able to hear a phone call when it wasn't on speakerphone from anybody. So let's just play with that for a second. Mom, can you hear me? All right. So if I were holding the phone here, I'm with Dana Bash. You know how you're always telling me to let her talk because she's so smart and I shouldn't say so much. Can you just say hello? Mom, she probably can't hear me. Mom, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. When you talk to me, I hear you.
I'm talking to you. Say hello to Dana Bash.
Hi, Mrs. Cuomo. How are you?
Oh. All right. So I can't hear your mother, Chris. You're over there. So
this is across the table.
This is not on speakerphone.
I'm sitting across the table.
It's not on speakerphone. It's regular phone. It's 2 feet away from Dana. She can hear my mother. I'm not sure Mom can hear us. Mom, thank you very much. Thank you for not saying anything that'll get me in trouble. I'll call you back. I love you.
Yeah, that went well.
So, yeah. So he tried disproving the president. He tried saying, hey, look, here, the president, Trump is lying. Watch. We can hear people's voices on the phone if you're sitting there, and nobody could hear what his mother was saying on the phone. And to me, that was one of the biggest mistakes of someone trying something they weren't prepared for since Marsha Clark and Chris Darden in the O.J. Simpson trial said, hey, we'll have O.J. try on the glove.
Right,
And then O.J. said, hey, the glove doesn't fit.
The Al Capone's vault. I thought that was messed up.
Yeah, Geraldo Rivera.
Yes.
And that goof. So, look, I don't know what's going to happen with this impeachment inquiry. Even if the Democratic-led House of Representatives decides to go ahead and try to impeach him, the Republican-led Senate is just going to throw it out. They're not going to impeach their own guy. So, when this is all said and done, he's got one more year left on this term. They'll just go to something else to try to go after him for, because that's what they've basically done. The opposing side for the last 3 years of his presidency is just try to find things to try to get him out of the White House. But that's where we're at right now. Coming up on the show, we've got the dumbest thing I read all week. Hang out for that here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7. New Orleans only classic rock. If you want to see, we were talking about it earlier in the show, and if you're just joining us, a second picture of legendary American outlaw Billy the Kid is out. There was only one picture of Billy the Kid, and it's that one where he's standing there. He's got that goofy look on his face. All of a sudden, now there's a second picture of Billy the Kid. They believe it was taken around 1877. He's playing poker. He's playing cards at a table with three other outlaws. And it's going up for auction now. All of a sudden, after all these years, a second Billy the Kid photograph. And if you want to see it, go to our website, bayou957.com. I'm fascinated with history. I love history. I love American history. And I love the Wild West. And for all of these years, we only thought there was one picture of Billy the Kid out there. But now, suddenly, there's a second picture. And what makes this picture so incredible is it's much clearer. than the other picture that we've all seen of Billy the Kid with the goofy look on his face. This one, these guys are playing cards, and this picture is incredible. The quality for 1877, and they say this picture was taken in around 1877, which would be about 4 years, around 4 years before he was shot and killed. But I just thought that was...
It's too bad they had the camera set for monochrome, though, because it would have been nice to have it in color. It's kind of a mess up there.
Well, I'm sure someone could grab it and Photoshop it, because I don't know what color eyes Billy the Kid had. That would have helped, that kind of thing. But think about it. I mean, such a legendary American outlaw for all of these years, and there's only been one picture that we've ever seen of him. Suddenly, I wake up this morning, there's a second picture of Billy the Kid, and now they're selling it on auction. I guess it had been with the family or a distant relative for, I don't know, the last 100 and however many years.
Or maybe it's a hoax.
You're thinking that, huh?
I think everything's a hoax. I wake up in the morning and just start looking for things to call hoaxes, and then may not air it, may not say it out loud, and then I may disprove, kind of like bunk, debunk, anti-bunk to myself, and then I'll move on. But the first thing I saw about that, it's like, this has got to be, it's got to be a hoax.
It looks too clear for a photo to be taken in 1877.
Well, that's one thing. I mean, and they have added like a little weathering or aging to the corner, which can be, all of that can be done in Photoshop. Here's the number one thing that stands out to me. You have four gentlemen sitting around a table, and it's shot like a one-camera TV series. If you notice in TV, anytime someone's sitting around a table, there's always the perspective from the viewer. There's no one sitting there because you can't shoot into the back of someone's head. And that photograph is set up like that. However, it is they're not acknowledging the fourth wall, as we've come to call that in television and in photography. They don't break the plane there of the fourth wall. They're looking at they're focusing on the game. It's not like they're waving at the camera. So why then have it set up that way? So it's I'm going to do more. I've curtailed all of my other activities for the weekend. I've cleared my schedule. I've cleared my calendar, and it's going to be debunking all weekend. Or is that bunking? Well, is it bunking or debunking? It hasn't been debunked. It hasn't been bunked yet. So I may unbunk it.
Well,
I'll bunk it.
It's going up on auction, that photo, and they're hoping to get... Right now, there's a $1 million price tag on it.
Hmm.
And if you love history like me, and if you're into the old American Wild West, boy, that would be a nice keepsake if you had an extra $1 million. But the only thing that I question is the clarity of the picture. It seems to me it's too clear. It's too good of a photo to be taken with the photograph equipment that was around in 1877,
mm-hmm.
when they're saying that this one was taken. It's a great photo. And again, if you want to see a Billy the Kid playing cards, after all of these years, finally a second picture of William H. Bonney, Billy the Kid, or whatever the hell you wanted to call him, is out there. It's on our website now. We've linked to it. Go to Bayou957.com. Bayou95.7, the classic rock of New Orleans. Good morning. It's the John Osterlund Morning Show. And it's just after 8:35, and since it's Friday, this is where we tell you the dumbest thing I read all week.
But first, this runner-up with audio. It's an audio daily double. Woman running late for train calls 911 asking for emergency ride service. Huh? Dateline, Toronto, police in Ontario. Toronto is one of the great cities in North America. I've not yet been there, but it's certainly on my list. It's definitely, I would say, in the top 10, maybe 12, maybe 15. But back to the story. Police in Ontario are reminding the public to avoid dialing 911 to report non-emergency situations after a woman called to ask if she could get a, quote, emergency ride to the train she was running late for, the train to which she was running late. Pardon the dangle. They wrote it. I didn't write it. Quote, being late for a trip is never ideal, officers with the Peel Regional Police wrote in a tweet on Thursday morning. Calling 911 to ask for police to ask to act as an emergency ride service to get you there on time, not going to happen. They posted this entire conversation on their Peel, whatever I said that was, Peel Regional Police Department website, or actually on their Twitter, but you don't have to go looking for that, because I have it for you now.
911, do you need police, fire, ambulance?
This is in terms of an officer. I'm supposed to have a trip to Union Station. The ride that was supposed to show up for me this morning did not, and I don't know how you guys work with services in terms of that, because I'm in a taxi right now, but it's not going to get me to the station on time for my train to board at 9:45.
Okay, I'm sorry. So you're in a taxi cab and you think you're going to be late for your train ride at Union Station?
Yeah.
And so what would you like an officer to do?
Do you guys offer emergency ride services or not?
An emergency ride service.
No, I don't know how you guys operate.
Well, I can assure you we don't do that.
My apologies.
Okay, so you can call a cab or get in the cab and go to your appointment. Okay, you're welcome.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye now. It's pretty dumb.
That went well. That reminds me, it's reminiscent of the call, the great Mike Forbes, the lady calls 911 asking for help with her two daughters who are like 9 and 12 years old, and they're physically fighting with each other, and one is as strong as an ox, stronger than the mother. And of course, dispatcher Mike Forbes, one of my personal heroes, says, would you like us to send someone over and shoot him?
Yeah, that was good.
Best 911 call ever.
Didn't he lose his job as a 911 dispatcher because he said that?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's something.
All right, and here's the dumbest thing I read all week. Burglar fell through ceiling while hiding in attic from cops in house he just robbed. This happened in Nashville, Tennessee.
Another beautiful city in all of North America, but I've been there many times. Doesn't need to go on the list.
Authorities in Tennessee say a burglar spotted on a homeowner's camera system fell through the attic of a home while he was trying to hide from police. Justin Mangrum fell through the ceiling of the home he was attempting to rob on Wednesday. And he landed right on the kitchen floor. And because there are cameras everywhere these days, inside people's homes, outside people's homes, on every street, in every room pretty much in people's homes, the homeowner was at work, called 911, unlike the 911 caller Brewster just told about, and they had a legitimate 911 phone call. Because the homeowner was sitting at work, watching the cameras from inside his home. And that's when he happened to see a man fall through the ceiling of his kitchen and land on the kitchen floor. And that would probably shake anybody up if you're at work and you're looking at your home camera and you see something like that. So the man called 911 and the cops got there pretty quick and they were able to arrest this guy. And that's something, though. And I got his mugshot, and he's got 1, 2, 3, 4 face tattoos. Including the money sign tattooed on the bridge of his nose.
Nice.
In between his eyebrows. Well, he didn't get what he was looking for here because while he was in the attic, he fell through the ceiling of the kitchen and landed on the kitchen floor. And that was all caught on video, and the cops were able to arrest them. If you want to see that mugshot, because, again, the four face tattoos, you know, they're not going to help him get a job, but either is this, getting arrested for robbing a house in Nashville, Tennessee, having that on his resume, that's not going to help him get a job either. That can go right next to the face tattoos when he's looking for a job. So if you want to see that mugshot and that story, it's something. Go to our website for the dumbest thing that I read all week and saw all week. Go to Bayou957.com. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans only classic rock. Tomorrow is National Cashew Day. According to a new survey I just read, the cashew is the 10th most popular nut in America. Can you name the most popular nut in America right now? Bernie Sanders. Coming up next, it's our commercial free ride here on Bayou 95.7. Bayou 95.7, New Orleans' only classic rock. So this weekend, LSU is a 43-point favorite over Arkansas. What happened to that football program at Arkansas? So LSU's a 43-point favorite, meaning if you were going to bet on the game and you bet on LSU, they would have to win by more than 43 points. And then on Sunday, the Saints are a 9.5-point favorite over Carolina here in the Dome. So this weekend, LSU and the Saints are combined 52.5-point favorites to win their football games, with LSU being number one in every poll in America and the Saints being Vegas's bet to make it to the Super Bowl, best team in the NFC. It's a great time to be a football fan in these parts. And tomorrow, the ESPN show, College Game Day, we've talked about them a couple of times before on our show. They're going to go to Columbus, Ohio for their pregame show. They pick what they think is the best game of the week, and then the ESPN college football guys, they all go and show up before the game, and they set up on campus for their, and it's called ESPN Game Day. Although people in Columbus, Ohio at Ohio State University aren't that thrilled about it. As a matter of fact, they're hoping that no one shows up. They have a boycott going on, hashtag boycott College Game Day, because they feel ESPN and the College Game Day crew, they show too much bias towards the SEC, the Southeastern Conference here, where LSU's conference. So the fans out of Ohio State University and the people up there, they believe that ESPN is not in their college football crew. They're too biased when it comes to the SEC. So what they plan on doing is having them sit there tomorrow on an empty campus, or at least in front of no one. Because one of the big things about ESPN's College Game Day TV show is there's usually a bunch of people that are behind them.
And on their cell phones, and they're waving. And hey, look at me, I'm on ESPN.
Yeah, they got all of that. And they got their flags and banners and things like that.
It's a bit awkward for Kirk Herbstreit, who is a Ohio State graduate.
That's
One of the commentators.
It'll be interesting to tune into that show tomorrow to see if there is no one behind them, if it's like a ghost town, it's crickets.
Maybe he can treat their stadium like Baker Mayfield with his commercials where he lives in Cleveland Stadium.
Yeah, those are pretty funny commercials.
They're good.
And that's going to do it for our show. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Have a great, safe weekend. Ginty is next. Ginty! He's got your music notes at noon. We'll chat again Monday morning here on Bayou 95.7.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.